Our next speaker is going to talk about addressing the use of intimate partner violence with clients in treatment of tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use disorders. I'd like for you to give a warm welcome to Dr. Lori Markoff. Dr. Markoff is a licensed psychologist and a director of trauma integration services for the Institute for Health and Recovery in Cambridge, Massachusetts. In her current position, she provides training and consultation to assist agencies providing a range of human and correctional services in Massachusetts and nationally to enhance their capacity to provide trauma information, integrated care. Dr. Markoff has published articles and curricula on topics such as systems change, trauma-informed services, and women and co-occurring disorders. I'd like for you to give a warm welcome to Dr. Markoff.
Hi. So just as in my colleague's previous presentation, this project also is a collaboration with the Department of Public Health Battery Intervention Programs, and so I'm going to let Robert Hayner begin the presentation.
Thank you. I actually think we have no relationships to disclose. Again, this is actually just another data set that indicates the strong correlation between these two areas. But I think particularly the last point, men who use IPV are 11 times more likely to use IPV when drinking, is an important sort of piece to hone in on. And actually this I think is worth looking at. In particular, I think this correlates too with some of the work that we're doing through the ESPRT, in the sense that 34, this is our own data that we collect from the programs. Typically this data is collected at intake. So again, part of the purpose of the work that we are working through with ESPRT is as these participants develop relationships with their co-facilitators, they're obviously more forthcoming. So we're still looking at the disenrollment data to understand sort of the change piece of this. But nonetheless, I think the critical data point here is that 34% use substances within 4 hours of referral of the incident. So in other words, they were drinking within 4 hours of the time that they perpetrated violence and were arrested, and that's the incident that brought them to the program. and I think, you know, 18% of those didn't believe that substance use was an issue. So we're still trying to call out what all this means in terms of our work, but I think we clearly are beginning to understand the need through looking at this data. So why do this? I guess that's the important question. And, you know, it, clearly, as I said earlier, you know, the goal of our work is to increase safety for victims and families and survivors. We want to try to intervene in the intergenerational transmission of violence. And I think critical to all this work is the fact that one needs to not perpetrate any violence, but in this case, domestic violence, if one is working through recovery. So that again is a really important point that brings these two areas together. And as we know, the use of IPV can trigger a relapse. And I think particularly if we don't address this, we are sending messages of complicity, that it's okay for these kinds of behaviors and things to take place, and that's not a good message to send to victims who are struggling with this issue to begin with. And again, I think there's a misunderstanding and a misperception in terms of victims and partners around substance use, that if only he or she would stop drinking, then the violence would stop. And there's some validity to that, but that's not necessarily, again, the reason that people are perpetrating violence. So, do you want to take over?
If you want me to.
Sure.
Okay. So this particular project began with a group of people getting together to talk about the fact that the batterer intervention programs, although they sometimes refer to substance use treatment, we weren't even collecting information about that, and that substance use programs were not necessarily making referral to batterer intervention. And that was seen as a problem. If the co-occurrence is so great, why is that not being addressed? Why are programs not talking about that? And so we started this process by creating a working group that included us. So included Bob from the Department of Public Health, also included some of the, originally it included some of the Survivor Services people from the Department of Public Health as well, people from the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services, and then we as a training and technical assistance and service delivery statewide organization were also at the table to sort of provide our input, and then one of the batter intervention programs Emerge was also part of this working group. So we started by talking about, you know, so what do we need to do to raise awareness so that this would be addressed during treatment, and what do programs need? So we started by doing a group of focus groups with the substance abuse providers and asking them about referrals to batter intervention, asking them, you know, if they had made referrals, And what would get in their way? What were the obstacles to making those kinds of referrals? And the things that they said they would need in order to be able to address the use of violence, intimate partner violence within their programs, was that they needed training on intimate partner violence and how to address it, because they didn't feel confident that they knew how to have those conversations in a way that would be most helpful. They needed training about what happens in batter intervention, because they're not really comfortable making referrals to something unless it's really clear to them what's going to go on in those groups. And so they needed more information about that. And then they really wanted to know their local batter intervention providers. They didn't want to be making referrals to programs that they really didn't feel connected to, but felt like if they developed relationships with those programs, then the referrals would be more, it'd be easier to make the referrals and they'd be more comfortable doing it. But the other thing that they asked for was they wanted to have a curriculum that talked about the perpetration of violence to use with their participants in substance use treatment. They wanted to have that happen sort of as a natural part of treatment so that people could self-identify. So in the conversation, would people have the opportunity to look at their own use of violence and notice that intimate partner violence was a problem for them in their lives? And so those were the findings of the focus group. And then we proceeded to try and do a pilot to see whether we could provide some of that training and information. And so we began by piloting in one men's residential treatment program, and the Institute for Health and Recovery, as part of our regular work with substance use treatment programs, we go to programs and we do training on trauma-informed care in general. So we teach all the staff of a program about the impact of trauma, how it's related to substance use, and what kinds of interactions with clients are useful if you assume that many clients are trauma survivors. That's what we do. And then we actually help programs develop trauma integration strategic plans. And that's sort of how we regularly have worked with programs. And at the end of that process, when the staff are trained and, you know, sort of ready to implement trauma-informed practices, then they often think about whether they want a curriculum to address trauma within their programs. And so there's a number of curriculum-based group interventions that programs can implement in order to help their clients to work on sort of trauma recovery skills. And so that's sort of our regular work. And what we added to that for this pilot, so the 4 hours of trauma-informed training is what they were going to get anyway. But then we added 6 hours of training that Robert did with David Adams, who's the director, co-director of Emerge, one of the batter intervention programs. And those trainings talked about how to address intimate partner violence in substance use treatment, how you would have those conversations, what that would look like, and then educated the providers about batter intervention programs, how they worked, and how you make a referral, and particularly a robust referral. So a referral that includes communication and follow-up to see how, you know, to help people to really make the referral, not just here, you know, giving you a number, but actually how to make a robust referral. So that was the preparation. Once they'd had that training, then we offered a curriculum to provide that psycho-ed piece about both the use of violence and victimization. And what we were aware of is that Covington, Griffin, and Dower, so Stephanie Covington, Dan Griffin, and Rick Dower, had just produced this new curriculum called Helping Men Recover, which is a curriculum, a trauma-informed curriculum about recovery that includes sessions about both victimization and the use of violence. And they're really, it's done in a very motivational interviewing kind of way. The session where they talk about the use of violence asks people to name different kinds of abuse and then asks them to how many of them have experienced those kinds of abuse, and what was that like to experience, and then how many of them have perpetrated some of those kinds of abuse, and what was that like, and what's the impact of that on you? So it's a very motivational, interviewing, open kind of conversation that comes from the participants, rather than someone saying this is what abuse is. At the same time, it very clearly says that the abuse that happened to you as a child was not your fault, and the impact of that, you know, is a shame and a tragedy, and that's a problem, but that your perpetration of violence as an adult is something you are responsible for. So that, you know, no matter what happened to you in the past, now you're an adult and your use of intimate partner violence has to stop and you're responsible for it. The other thing about the curriculum is it really looks a lot at the male role and what, you know, sort of what the expectations are for the male in our society and how those myths or beliefs about what a man is supposed to be can conflict with the kinds of skills that a man needs to use in order to recover from substance use. So, you know, if you're not supposed to express vulnerability and you're not supposed to talk about difficult things as a man because you're tough and you can handle it and, you know, that conflicts with the notion of asking for help, of talking about what you struggle with, and those kinds of things. And so Helping Men Recover really helps men to look at sort of how the male role has impacted them, and then what kind of man they want to be. And so the part about the violence also asks that question. You know, what kind of man do you want to be, and how does your use, you know, and does the use of violence really, is that part of who you want to be going forward? And so it's a very interesting way of having this conversation. So again, you know, the message is you're not responsible for what was done to you as a child, but you are responsible for what you do as an adult, and that abuse must stop. So we took that curriculum, so after the trauma-informed training and the training on batter intervention programs and what they're like and on making a referral and how to talk to clients about their use of violence, then we helped the men's residential program to implement the Helping Men Recover groups. And we do that by co-leading the group with program staff. So that's how they learn to do the group. It's just a good way to teach, to model the group, to do the group together. And then we eventually leave, so it's to build their capacity to do those groups in an ongoing way. in that particular men's residential as the result of this whole trauma-informed initiative that included this extra training and helping men recover, they ended up deciding to actually include in their intake questions about the use of violence. They felt comfortable enough talking to the clients about that to actually put it in their intake. So they put in questions about victimization, and they put in questions about the use of violence, intimate partner violence in particular. And then they spent a lot of time sort of in their supervisions and their team meetings whenever the use of violence was discussed. The pilot got them to have more conversations about how do you talk to our clients about that, what are we seeing, that kind of thing. So that addressing violence and making referral to battery intervention programs, you know, they were able to do that a little bit more. It's a slow process, but they did make some referrals and include addressing the violence in people's treatment plans while they were in the program. And then, you know, some people wouldn't choose to go, but they would walk out the door. Their aftercare plan would, they'd still be saying, at some point you need to address your use of intimate partner violence as part of your recovery. So recovery is about looking at the behaviors that get in your way in your life, and substance use is part of that, but so is the perpetration of intimate partner violence. So as outcomes, they did make some referrals to battery intervention programs. The staff did report that they found, you know, talking about both experience of victimization and about intimate partner violence easier, having gone through this process. The clients seemed to find it easier to talk about their use of violence in a context in which they realized they weren't the only ones. So it encouraged disclosure by the very fact that they were sitting with the clients in the program together and noticing that, oh, well, he's done this and he's done that, so I'm not the only one. And at the same time, the message was very clear that if you are abusing somebody, it has to stop. And there was a report that the clients did develop better insight both about their victimization and the impact that it had on them, but also understood that the impact of their own victimization did not excuse their use of violence. That message seemed to come through really clearly. So having done the pilot, we are hoping to move forward and to do this. We're going to do another pilot, I think, because there's a couple of things that we learned. One is that this period of intense sort of consultation and training was really useful, but that after the fact, it seemed like staff still needed something, that they might need a few more sessions of particularly skill practice, so role-playing, talking about violence with their clients, that kind of thing. That's what the program felt that they needed. So the next time we do it, we will offer that as well as part of the package. And they also, what we hadn't done and what we hope to do going forward, is to include the local battery intervention program. So the curriculum was developed, the training piece of it, you know, it was David Adams from Emerge who did it, but Emerge isn't necessarily the program that every substance use treatment program would be referring to, because there are substance use treatment programs in different parts of the state that would refer to their local providers. And so we want to insert something that involves the local program also coming in so that they really do get to develop those relationships. So we're going to do another pilot with those things added and a little bit more rigorous data collection. And then we're hoping eventually to implement this statewide, so that all of the residential treatment programs will have this process where, as they're implementing trauma-informed care, they get trained on intimate partner violence and battery intervention, and then are offered the opportunity to implement the Helping Men Recover curriculum. So, thank you very much.
Questions. Some of you may have burning questions. that just cannot wait, so we can take 1 or 2 minutes for those burning questions, and hopefully we'll have some time at the end.
Is it available, the curriculum?
Yeah, Helping Men Recover is available. I can't remember who the what's the publisher's name? It's Hazleton, I think. So yes, that curriculum is out there. Our own training, the part about intimate partner violence, at the moment that isn't like made into a formal curriculum, but we do have a toolkit for developing trauma-informed organizations that has a bunch of tools in it, but it does not include that particular piece yet. www.healthrecovery.org is our website. It should be on the first slide of the presentation. Other questions? Okay, yeah.
Showing that some perpetrators were very upset by their perpetration of violence during their partners, and others actually got calmed down. I mean, they're very scary, and that it seemed like when they perpetrated, it actually seemed to calm them down. So they should look at heart rate before and after. And I'm just wondering if you try to differentiate between types of perpetrator problems before you do an intervention.
Right, I don't actually do batterer intervention, so maybe you could talk about that. So the question was that there's some previous research that found that there were batterers who, after they battered, felt remorse, and then there were batterers who felt that the battering actually calmed them down, and she wondered if we intervened differently with those two groups. As far as I know, no, but remember that it's a group that involves discussion, you know, so the batterers themselves are going to be talking about, you know, what the experience is and what its impact is and that kind of thing. So the treatment is individualized enough at, you know, so that people get to talk about sort of what their experience is. Did you want to add anything?
I think that something like that would come through in the process of over the 40 weeks, but it's not necessarily something that's done at the beginning. I think, again, part of the movement of the practice is to better understand the individual as the individual sits within the group context. So assessment is becoming a little more critical of that.
Yes, sir?
Maybe Bob can answer correctly. The use of alcohol is giving themselves permission to act out.
Sometimes.
How does that fit in with the discussions? Is it a common way of thinking that people would say, oh, I just was drunk, right?
I don't know if it's common, but it's certainly something that eventually becomes obvious through the conversation. And sometimes that is the case, I think, because it allows you to do what I want to do. So, yes.
And how do you respond to that? How do you build up a change into that direction of thinking in your training?
You mean within the context of the veteran intervention group?
Yes.
That's a complicated question. And a complicated answer, I think, too.
Yeah. Well, in a substance use treatment context, so here we're talking about having these conversations within substance use treatment, and when you do substance use treatment, you're going to do a functional analysis of and conversations about, so what is the payoff for you of your use? And that would come up as, oh, the payoff is it gives me permission to do this. So, okay, that's this side, and then what's the consequence of that? And so the person is going to have to struggle with, well, okay, it lets me do what I want to do, and on the other hand, here are the consequences. And that would be the conversation. And the idea is for the person to struggle with that question of, you know, what it costs them compared to what they get out of it.
And then in the project that we've been working on, we use the motivational interviewing tools like the decisional matrix, the ruler, and we've adapted them for using group work or, you know, we can use individually.
Again, can we give these presenters a big hand? Because